This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, this is Rebecca Buchanan, host of New Books Network, New Books and Poetry. And today I'm here with Ari Gold, who, along with his father, Herbert Gold, and his brother, Ethan, is the author of Father Versus Sons, A Correspondence in Poems. Ari, thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you to the listeners who care about poetry, because it saves the soul of our species.
So this is a really interesting book, and how it sort of came to be. So can you talk a little bit about how this collection came to be, how you put it together, and why you put it together?
Yeah, so my father, Herbert Gold, was a novelist who came of age around the same time as Allen Ginsberg, who he was good friends with and went to college with, and is sort of associated with the Beats because he knew all those people, although he wasn't really a beat writer in terms of his style. But anyway, he was a novelist for his whole life, and was really sustained his spirit by writing every morning. And in his late 90s, his eyesight started to go, and then COVID hit. And so his super social personality got limited by being told he couldn't leave his apartment in Russian Hill, San Francisco. And his creative spirit was then also stuck because he couldn't really see the typewriter that he had been using for many decades. And meanwhile, I was down in Los Angeles. I'm a filmmaker. My brother is a musician. And we had, with a group of friends, started a poetry group right before COVID hit, very informal. None of us were really poets, but we would write in with a technique that allowed us to write by instinct. So one of the members of the group would pull a book off the shelf, pull like two or three random words out of it, and then everyone would write a poem inspired by those words in some way, and then read to each other. And it was really lovely. And it was sort of a, you know, modern version of, I suppose, some kind of like beat gathering. And when lockdown happened, I really got concerned for my dad, who was such a vital person, was now in his 90s and still vital, but kind of stuck. And so I started mailing him poems that I was writing in this group, and I would put it in the envelope, a self-addressed stamped envelope back to me, and say, send me a poem back. And so he abandoned his typewriter and started writing poems back to me that were astounding poems and to my mind, and allowed me to see a side of him that I never had as his son. His writing was always witty and always, incisive, and he wrote these great novels, but the poems were really speaking the truth of where he was at that moment in a personal way that I'd never seen before. And it became this form of communication between us where we were sending poems back and forth and talking about, you know, love and family and death and disappointment and sex and passion and, you know, everything under the sun, back and forth through these verses. And so that's where the idea of the poem Father Versus Sons, I have a little spelling pun in the word verses, came about. That and my brother Ethan Gold, who was part of this poetry group, later on in the process with my brother, I told him what was happening between me and our dad, and I invited him to write some poems as well, to get my dad, you know, to keep my dad inspired, essentially. So that's how the book came about, and it really became this kind of testament to a way that fathers and sons can communicate, and kind of breaking through what can be a masculine barrier between men to speak to each other about what's on their minds. And so I thought it would be a great thing to share with the world. So putting together the book, I, you know, laid out all the poems in a kind of dialogue and also included a lot of photographs and art. So it's like, you know, somewhere in between a poetry book and a picture book, so that people can experience a bit of our family's way of communicating and hopefully inspire them to, you know, see about ways that they can communicate with their loved ones where there might be something stuck in the communication pipeline.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted, and you brought it up, but I wanted to talk about was that it's more than poetry. You have sort of collages, you have images throughout it. And can you talk a little bit about sort of those choices and getting, like, some of those photos are when you're younger, some of them I'm guessing are from your father's home, and where he lived for decades, right? And so can you talk a little bit about the visual aesthetic of this? You say you're a filmmaker, so I think that fits in well, and how that kind of fits in and is a poetic form in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I have thousands of photos from my life and some photos from my dad's life before I was born, including, you know, going back to ancestors, at least one or two generations back, and taking all of these photos and just kind of meditating on a chapter by chapter basis, because the poems are organized by sort of by theme, where we're talking about young love or we're talking about heartbreak or and so I would just take a feeling temperature reading in myself about what the chapter meant and what it said to me, and then think about which photos from our lives had a bit of that energy. I mean, I even have like when I was 10 years old, I had a girlfriend, and she sent me a breakup letter, and I had put the breakup letter on the heartbreak page, which has the same chapter about my mother leaving my father and his heartbreak about that. And so, you know, those kinds of fun juxtapositions I see as like Easter eggs, I guess, for the reader to discover if they look carefully at the pictures and think about what they mean, and if they want to squint at the, you know, Emily's breakup where she said she really liked cats but she didn't want to go out with me,
which is, I mean, they're beautiful. Like, I loved I do a lot of zine work and research and zines, so it very much had that feel. I love the sort of collage and the imagery with the poems and throughout it, so I really love that.
I actually have a zine that I just put out last year as well, so it's definitely zine adjacent in terms of its conception and construction.
So let's talk a little bit about sort of these chapter. You talk about how you put this into chapters, right? So you have these poems in chapters, and it sort of moves back and forth between you and your father, and your brother comes in at times. So you start with kind of young love and other disasters. And so can you talk a little bit about sort of the poems in that chapter, what you were trying to sort of put together when you were putting that collection, that part of the book together?
Yeah, so let me open it up to refresh my memory. But yeah, so this one actually, I just was looking at the collage there, right? Has the breakup letter from age 10. So that one starts with a poem that I wrote about my visit to the village that my father's father came from. I went to Ukraine to hunt down the, you know, the homeland of my grandparents. And my father had never been there, and he'd never really expressed any interest in going. And I felt compelled to see where his father was born, and actually had a really intense experience there where I was outside of cell phone reception. I was wandering around this little village, like way, way outside in the countryside. And after the visit, where there was almost nobody other than goats and geese wandering the streets, I went swimming in this little creek in the north side of town and started crying. And I don't cry easily, but I need Cryagra to cry. But, you know, I probably hadn't cried in 10 years. And I started crying when I was swimming in this creek. And then later, when I got back to cell phone reception, I had a friend in Kiev who had sent me like 12 text messages that I haven't received, saying, oh, when you get to Kupin, this village, you should go to this creek on the north side of town, because that's all where all the Jews were shot, and you might want to visit that. And it was a really obviously intense experience to realize that I had felt that. I'd felt a sort of something connection with my ancestors and their pain in this water. So I ended up starting the Young Love chapter with a poem about that village and my grandfather being 12 years old and getting beat up and just wanting to leave because he wants to have a fun life, including young love elsewhere in America. And so he headed out of town when he was about 13 by himself, leaving that village. And so that kind of young spunkiness is what inspired the poem. And then the poem that immediately follows that is my father's poem about his father from, you know, a different perspective, seeing him as an adult who he didn't understand, but being young himself. So, and then it kind of ends up toggling to, you know, each of our kind of dreams as boys or young men about what romantic love might look like. And, you know, the rest of the chapter is kind of playing with that. So that, you know, it's an example of how the dialogue works on the page.
Right. And you have sort of, you go back and forth between, like, you have another sort of chapter on bigamy in advancing ages, right? You sort of, one of the sort of themes that threads throughout this book seems to be like thinking about love and thinking about relationships. So can you talk about that a little, what you might have learned about your father, about yourself in sort of writing about this, writing these poems back and forth with him, and how that sort of came through in some of these chapters and poems?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with a father who was had a lot of girlfriends, but he had been left by my mom, and I, you know, grew up in with my mother mostly, and didn't get to know my father more deeply until my mother was killed in a helicopter crash when I was 21. So my relationship with him was really affected by my vision of him as a, on the one hand, very successful with women, ladies man, you know, a great storyteller, always had people kind of not quite fawning over him, but there was a lot of attention about him as a, you know, at least locally famous writer and handsome and great storyteller. But at the same time that I knew he was successful, you know, sexually successful that way, I also very viscerally felt as a kid the sense that he had failed to keep my mother, that she had left him, And he, like a beaten down dog, was always hoping somehow, until she died, that somehow she might come back to him, even, you know, many, many, many years after. That wouldn't rationally have been something that was in the cards. So as a boy, I think I was confused about how romantic love worked, because I think kids kind of take the example of their parents and assume that's how it's supposed to be, no matter how crazy the example might be. And mine wasn't necessarily crazy, but my paradigm was, oh, when you're an adult, what happens is you love someone, but they leave you. So then you have a lot of girlfriends instead. You know, that's like, of course, that's what everyone does, you know. So the poems about love and longing and kind of romantic fantasy and all that stuff, I think, are playing with that, because, you know, for example, there's a poem called Magic Kimmy that my dad wrote about a sexy dream he had when he was 98 about, you know, some blonde whose name was Kim Lister, and he called me and told me about the poem, but also told me, do I know someone named Kim Lister? Have I met someone? Can you use what he called the magic machine, you know, jokingly about the computer, because he didn't have a computer or a cell phone, very old school in terms of his communication methods. So he had me kind of search around the internet for a Kim Lister based on his description. And I sent him a few that I printed out. I said, I found this one on Facebook. I found this one on Google. I found this one in Michigan. You know, any of these ring a bell? And I sent it to him, and he looked at all of them and said, I don't think any of these are the Kim Lister that I dreamt about. But if she's out there.
You are in search of Kim Lister.
Yes, in search of someone who appeared to him in a dream. I think there's two poems about her in the book, and she may or may not exist, but
she exists somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So relationships, another thing that sort of comes through here in a number of these chapters is I'll Not Die Yesterday is one of your chapters, right? Like, so talking about kind of loss and death, your father lived to be almost 100, right?
We did a reading with City Lights Books on his 100th birthday a couple days ago. And the intention was for him to be at that reading with me. That's not how it ended up going, but the bell of mortality is definitely ringing all over this book. And my father was, you know, very healthy and vital, way past his peers in many cases. I mean, he outlived almost all of his peers, and then even the young friends that he made when he was middle-aged were getting old and dying, and he was outliving them too, you know. So this strange pain of being still alive is something that he was really clearly thinking about a lot, and the joy of being alive and having, you know, being able to read his New York Times in the morning and talk to his kids and go to the coffee shop and flirt with the you know, girl serving coffee. He loved all those things, and yet at the same time he knew that he wasn't a young man, and so a lot of his poems are really addressing death from the point of view of himself facing it, death from the point of view of seeing people around him die, maybe in the biggest way, the death of the love of his life, my mother, who, you know, died many years after leaving him, but he still loved her. And so, yeah, death really runs all the way through Father versus Sons. And of course the flip side of death is life. So that's, that's mm-hmm. what the book is about.
So there's these, you know, really, I don't know if heavy is the right word, but these themes, right? We have death, we have, you know, you sort of look at love and relationships, but there's also some sort of whimsy in here. Like, you, even when your brother comes in, you've kind of entitled that, like, Ethan supports the postal service. And so can you talk a little bit about that, like, this time when you wrote these back and forth, where, you know, I think we just a couple days ago, it was the fifth year anniversary of kind of the real start to this pandemic. So we have this time when we're separated, but you also were able to kind of enjoy and have fun. And so can you talk a little bit about that and how that comes out in your poems and throughout this?
Yeah, well, I mean, a sense of humor was always part of our communication, you know, between all of us. And so, you know, my dad liked a good pun. he had no patience for people who had no sense of humor. And so, yeah, the poems, I mean, some of the favorite poems that I wrote, his favorite poems of mine, some of them were the really silly ones. You know, there's one called Vegetarian, but the whole poem is just, I'm not a vegetarian because I love animals. I am a vegetarian because I hate plants. And so that obviously was not a very serious poem, but he loved it. You know, when I sent it to him, and he kept quoting it back to me. So, you know, I think humor is, I mean, that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of filmmakers that are celebrated now who are, in my view, completely humorless. And I don't like a lot of these big budget, serious, you know, action and fantasy movies where they're taking everything so seriously, and I find myself just saying, is life really like that without some jokes here and there and some wit and, you know, playing with language, playing with, you know, self-mockery. And so, yeah, I mean, I wanted to keep all the way through to the last page where, you know, my dad is talking about facing down his death and sort of joking about the fact that he shouldn't be writing poetry because it's a bad business choice, you know. So, yeah, I mean, we did our best to keep joking all the way through everything.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And it comes through, right? Because it comes through, and I really did. That was one of the things I really loved about sort of reading these poems, because you could kind of see that even though there were topics that were, you know, struggled with, that you could play and you could play around with this. And I think so one of the things, and I think you mentioned it at the beginning, that I wanted to ask you about too, because through all of this, like, you talk a little bit, you mentioned when you were putting this together, thinking about how fathers and sons communicate and sort of dialogue and masculinity. So in writing this and in doing this, were there things that you really learned about your father, learned about you, learned about sort of communication in these ways about, you know, that you hadn't really thought about, or you, it sort of changed your view on things before you went through this process of writing these poems?
Well, I don't know that there was something intellectual that changed in me. I always knew my father was witty. We knew we had a certain limitation as people, but particularly as men in the way we communicated with each other. But what changed was emotional, in the sense that he was not a great listener. He was a great storyteller, but not a great listener. And then ironically, his, you know, hearing got worse and worse. So his ability to listen got worse and worse. And by writing poems to each other, we were able to communicate in some ways more directly than we could any other way. And he wouldn't really talk to me about his feelings about death directly. I mean, he would sort of joke about them, but the poems say it more directly. And some of my, you know, romantic disappointments or sense of loss and confusion in my life, we sometimes wouldn't talk about directly either, but we talk about each other in the poems. And then we never really addressed that. So he, you know, he refers to me as his impatient, sad son in one poem, because he knew how frustrated I was that, you know, I had made my second feature film at that point. I was really struggling to get the movie out. It was like a little independent movie. And it was interesting to see him refer to me, you know, directly within the space of a week, where I was really depressed about, you know, trying to get this movie called The Song of Sway Lake, trying to get it out. We had won a bunch of festival prizes, but nobody seemed to care, you know, the independent film challenge. And his referring to me that way was a little bit strange, but also I realized how much my suffering affected him. You know, if I was struggling, he felt that struggle. And he put it down in words. So whether it was us being able to kind of joke with each other about our, you know, our Kim Listers and those kind of silly things, like, you know, dreaming about some random non-existent blonde, we could also talk about, you know, fears of failure, fears of death, and I suppose something that I learned, maybe, you know, and so what I'm speaking about is like the emotional connection just getting stronger. But there was also, I suppose, my a takeaway. It's silly to say that, but, you know, one thing that I think I really celebrate about him is that he proves that the notion that you can't teach an old new tricks is just complete bullshit. Because even at age 99, he was willing to listen, even if it was listening through reading a poem, willing to challenge himself to go deeper, willing to take the criticism sometimes of me and all of my siblings, who would get frustrated with his lack of focus when we were trying to speak to him, where he'd cut us off and, you know, take the first three words of something we said and turn it into a story he wanted to tell. And the fact that we could say, "Dad, you're interrupting again. Please, I need you to hear what I'm saying." And, you know, when he was a young man of 82, he might not have done that. But, you know, as he got closer to 100, he was willing to challenge himself. And that, you know, you so often hear that people say, "Oh, you know, my dad's 45. He's not going to change now." It's like, what, are you out of your mind? You know, my dad is 99, abnormally, you know, old, way older than any of my friends' parents, way older. And yet he was more flexible and more pliable than a lot of my friends report their parents to be. So that that's a beautiful thing to advertise to everybody, that it's possible. It's possible to keep changing, whether it's you or your loved ones or your parents or whatever. It's possible to push people to keep changing, but you have to, you can't be lazy. That's the thing. You have to push yourself. You have to push the people around. You have the guts. You have to have the guts to say, hey, you know, this is, I know we just had a great conversation, but I don't feel like you heard me. And I need to say something again, and I need you to stop talking, or whatever it is that, you know, whatever the communication pattern is that's gotten calcified. You can always get out the chisel and break up that calcium.
So I would love for you to read from your book, right? We've been talking about your poetry and what you've been writing back and forth. So could you read from this, read some poems for us? So
sure.
We can hear what's, wait, yeah.
So much to choose from. So I could ask you, is there a subject that you want to hear about, or do you want me to pick?
You can pick. Pick.
Okay.
I know it's hard.
It's hard. All right. So, well, I guess I'll go, since I mentioned the comic poems, I maybe will do one of the less comic ones. Just because I feel like it. So, all right, I'm going to read a poem that my father wrote about my mother. And it's from a chapter called The Spider Plant, which will become clear when I read it. It's called Melissa, 1943 to 1991. To remember our marriage, to celebrate our divorce, she sweetly brought me a spider plant. Because they never die, she said, tendrils green, hanging like dreadlocks. Teasing, as she did when she was happy, angry, or confused, a little notch at the left corner of her mouth, she offered a green gift in a brown pot. It seemed permanent, and she kissed me. She died, but the spider plant gives birth to its shoots for years now, green nearly forever. I clip away the crisp brown leaves, and the green feels its chance, takes it forever, it seems, forever. I snip off the spreading brown and water the pot, and green is born overnight, it seems, as if there really is a forever. There was a storm. There was a helicopter. She didn't die, our sons and daughters say. She was killed. Her end is not the same. The end is always the same. But like the spider plant, she's only gone when I wake. When I sleep, she lives in dream, stubborn, immune to time, age, and catastrophe, denying that all who live must die. Yesterday lived last night and then again, more than enough time and too much, until soon enough I will submit, all who live must die, until I submit to the truth dream denies. Our children also sleep and will dream when my dreams stop. Of her holding the lamb chop by the bone, ferocious, teeth bared, delighted, attacking the last bloody shred. Their children will also count their losses, which are like mine, like yours. The blessings we gain are always lost, but forever present at night in dream, avid, ferocious, teeth bared. So
yes.
That's a poem about my mom by.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So this book comes out. It's available for pre-order, right? It's going to come out soon, a couple of weeks. It might be out by the time this goes live. And so, my kind of usually final question is around, like, what are you promotion, right? So what's happening with this book that you run, you know, like either with the book or anything that you're working on to get out there, right? This is kind of a unique project. So
Everyone buys the book at Father Versus Sons, ideally at a bookstore near you, if not invite online too. I'll say that I am doing something very unusual, which is I have this poetry book called Father Versus Sons about, you know, love and this relationship between father and sons. But I'm also in post-production on a movie called Brother Versus Brother, which is a cousin to this poetry book. And the movie is a fully improvised one-shot movie starring, yes, you guessed it, me and my brother and my father. And we shot it just a few weeks before before my dad died. I mean, we weren't, again, expecting him to die as we wanted him to be at the premiere. But we're playing ourselves, as all of us play ourselves in life. But we play ourselves live in a story of me and my brother playing music in the streets in San Francisco. And I'm trying to get my brother a gig, and we're going into all the beatnik, you know, former beatnik haunts, Vesuvio and Specs and the saloon, and we're wandering around getting more and more scared because our father was supposed to come meet us and watch us play music, and he doesn't show up. And so as the movie progresses, we, my brother and I, start fighting about whether we need to go find him. And so this movie, Brother Versus Brother, I am in post-production on and doing the mix down in the basement at Zoetrope Studios. And I hope this will come out sometime this year. I mean, movies take a long time to come out, but so that's cool. If people want to see or hear more about it, you know, I guess promotion, I can mention that, you know, I'm on social media. Ari Gold is my Instagram, or I'm on Facebook, or Ari Gold Films is my website if you want to watch my films. Is that what you mean by promotion?
Yeah, that's perfect. Like, and you know what? As you were talking, I've
got my horn.
Yes, exactly. But I do have one more, because you have, you talked about, you're making this film, you have this book, Father Versus Sons. Your father, it was, as you said, one of the last of a generation of, you know, writers. He was beat adjacent. He was part of this, you know, community, like, and he wrote novels. And I think at the beginning, in the intro in the book, you talk about how he wrote a poem once and it was like rejected. So he's like, I'm not writing poetry anymore. Like, what do you hold?
When he was 17. Yeah.
Like, no, which I love. Right. Oh, was it?
And I think it was accepted. And then he got embarrassed because it was too sentimental. Maybe.
I loved it, right? I was like, okay, so then I'm just gonna go right. Yeah. But like, yeah. What do you hope this book that you did, the film, like Brother Versus Brother, Father Versus Sons, like, do you hope that this, what do you hope this contributes to, kind of like that legacy of your father and of sort of this, that beat generation and the writers of his sort of, you know, generation as well?
Well, I have to admit that I really was frustrated to see that he was sort of forgotten. I mean, remembered by some who remember him, but the vast majority of people, readers, press, publishers that I talked to about the book, even, but also about him, you know, the editors who edited him were dead. Reviewers who pushed some of his books to the bestseller list long and long ago were dead. And I'm at this moment standing in my dad's apartment that he had since 1960, a rent controlled apartment in San Francisco, filled to the ceiling with books and articles and magazines of his own writing. And, you know, it's a, I would say it's like a museum, but it's a very disorganized museum. But one of the things that I really hope for with this book is to bring him back into the conversation. And you know, I think he's one of the greats of American letters of the last 100 years. And I think it would be wonderful if I had some hand in getting people reading him again. So, you know, I think he was at peace with, you know, the fact that he wasn't a best-selling writer anymore. It didn't bother him so much because he felt happy with his life and he knew he had had great successes. But I like the idea of him being, you know, in that list along with people like Saul Bellow and Ginsberg. And he would never be on the same list as Kerouac because he hated him. But, you know... So that would be nice. I mean, you know, does it really matter? Are any of us going to be remembered in 100 years? Probably not. So I don't know that it matters, but I do like the idea that if this book and the movie with him get some attention, that I think would be a great feeling as a son to have done that for him. And I wanted him to see all this, of course, but this is where we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ari, thank you so much for talking with me for New Books and Poetry. Again, Ari Gold, who along with his father, Herbert Gold, and a little help from his brother, Ethan, put together Fathers Versus Sons, A Correspondence in Poems. Thank you.
Thank you so much.